Welcome everybody, this is Dolphus 365 Patterns and Practices webcast, and this time we're going to talk about Microsoft Graph SDK, and more specifically for the .NET managed code. So we kind of have a look on the Microsoft Graph, and then we're going to have a look on the .NET SDK for Microsoft Graph, and what does it actually provide, how to use that, and what are the kind of a small gotchas around that. With me today is Paolo Pialorsi, and Paolo is going to lead the presentation today. So Paolo, will you do a quick introductions?
Yes, thank you Visa, and welcome everybody. I'm Paolo from PCs.com, and I'm a senior consultant focused on Office 365 and SharePoint topics. And yes, today we will dig into the Microsoft Graph SDK from a .NET developer perspective, but also more in general from a developer viewpoint.
Sounds good. Excellent. So Paolo is going to lead the presentation, and I'll be asking questions every now and then here and there, interrupting him while we can move along within the things. Just before we actually get started, just to remind everybody, the one address you want to remember, HTTP AKMS Office Dev PNP, and you'll land to the PNP site. Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices contains guidance for SharePoint framework, for SharePoint add-ins, for Microsoft Graph, Office 365 APIs, and all of that. So there's a lot of code examples, there's a lot of guidance documentations. We do a monthly community calls where we go through what has happened within the previous month, and we do have actually a few case studies as well. But I think the only thing to remember is the AKMS Office Dev PNP. So go and check it out. We'll have all the links to all of these webcasts and a lot of other stuff there as well. But let's get ongoing on today's session around the graph. And Paolo is going to lead today. And like mentioned, I'm going to then interrupt him while we go through the presentation. So Paolo, take it away.
Okay, thank you. First of all, let's start from the list of topics we will cover. We will start having a look at the Microsoft Graph API by themselves, a very short preview and overview of the Graph API. And then we will dig into the Graph SDK, and especially the Graph SDK for .NET developers, sharing with you about information about the architecture of the Graph SDK, as well as showing you some demos about how to use it in order to become powerful and reachful in your own solution consuming the Graph API. So let the PNP superhero fly away.
And always makes you smile. Yes, always makes you smile. Absolutely.
And so let's start with the Graph API firstly. So the Graph API, it is a new set of APIs provided by Microsoft since a few months ago, which allows us to consume most of the services right now provided by the Office 365 ecosystem using a unique set of APIs and a unique endpoint, a unified endpoint, so that from a developer perspective, it is much more easier to do a unique handshake to get a unique access token from an open authorization perspective, and to consume the full set of services provided with a unique developer experience. So as long as you know how to consume a set of REST APIs using open authorization, and as long as you have a development platform which allows you to make HTTPS requests, including the open authorization bearer token in the request headers, you will be ready to consume services which allow you to interact with Exchange Online, with OneDrive for Business, with OneNote, and all of the other services that are provided through the Office 365 offering. And not only those services which are related to Office 365, but as Visa can tell us, pretty soon many other services related to the entire Microsoft family, right, Visa?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's the reason originally this API was called Office Graph, but then it was renamed as a Microsoft Graph, because there's a lot of information outside of the Office 365 there as well. So it's a kind of a one API to rule them all, like we mentioned within the slide as well.
Exactly. So with this unique endpoint and unique API to rule them all, what can we do? Just to give you a kind of an overview, using the HTTPS graph.microsoft.com endpoint, which is the main URL of the entire family of Graph APIs, You can interact with your documents in OneDrive for Business, for example, with your mailboxes, with your calendar and contacts like people. You can do searches. You can consume the Office Graph, which is still there, related to the Office 365 family and to the experience, to the relationship that you can have between content and users in the Office 365 ecosystem of services. You can interact with the Office 365 groups, notebooks, videos, and many other capabilities provided by Office 365. And you can do that from whatever device and platform you like. So you can use an iOS platform, an Android platform, a Windows, which can be a Windows Phone or a unified Windows platform. And the overall goal of the Graph API is to give you a unique approach, an open approach, which can be consistent across multiple services and multiple platforms to reach your goals and to consume all of these APIs. And, well, from a developer perspective, so you have to consume the graph.microsoft.com URL, providing through the path of the URL what is your target. And when I say target, I mean the target version of the API that you want to consume, and any of the entities or entity sets that are available through the APIs, so that you will be able to consume their properties, to invoke operations related to any specific entity, and all of the capabilities that you have through the APIs are well documented in an information technology way, let me say, through a set of metadata descriptors, which are available under the $metadata URL related to any of the specific versions you want to consume. Right now, at the time of recording this webcast, we have the version 1.0 as the release to market version of the Graph API. And we also have the beta version, which is improving on a daily basis, which is under the beta relative URL of the graph.microsoft.com URL. And well, if you invoke any of those two URLs querying the $metadata endpoint, you will get back an XML descriptor, which will give you a bunch of information about what are the entities, what are the operations, and more in general, what are the capabilities of the specific version of API that you are targeting.
To be fair, that's kind of an additional information when you think of it, because you can always go to the documentation around those topics as well, because the documentation is in a relatively good shape. But no doubt, the metadata endpoint is pretty interesting as well.
Absolutely true. And in fact, I will go to show you a short demo about how to learn something about the Graph API and how to consume them. And right now, we will move to the browser and we will see the website of the Graph APIs as well as the $metadata endpoint to see what is available. So let me move to my browser. And here you can see I am in the graph.microsoft.io website, which is the documentation entry point from the Graph API's perspective. And as you can see here, you can find a bunch of information about the architecture of the Graph APIs, as well as some documentation about how to consume the Graph API with low-level information, like, for example, in V1 reference, a list of all the entities, all of the main entry points, and all of the operations that you can do against any of the specific entities provided through the APIs, as well as some useful links to samples and SDKs, which are already out of the box available to consume the Graph API from most of the common platform you have, like iOS, PHP, Node.js, Windows Phone, or Universal Windows App, and so on. And as you can see, there are already some of these platforms ready to go, and some others still under construction, like, for example, the Node.js, which will be come pretty soon. If you stay tuned, if you monitor this website, you will be able to see what is available and what is ready to go for consuming the API. As well as using the changelog link, you can also see what is happening in the beta endpoint, and so what are the new features and capabilities that are on a daily or weekly basis added to the beta endpoint.
And kind of a side note on that one, it's great to see what's actually coming, but please do not go to production with the beta endpoint, because those things are still moving. So always wait for the capabilities to be actually released within the version endpoints.
Absolutely true. Totally agree. If you want to approach the Graph API from a developer perspective, let me say from a low-level perspective, more or less low-level, you can, of course, consume the dollar metadata endpoint, which I'm showing you just for the sake of completeness, but we will not go through all of the XML elements in this file. I just want to let you know and let you see that inside this file, you can find a bunch of descriptors of all of the entities available in the GraphAPI. So, for example, if I search for the user entity, I can see that we have an entity type, which is an XML element, which will define how a user is made. So we can see that a user has a display name, a given name, a mail address, and stuff like that. And moreover, if we search for graph service, we see that we have an entity container element, which defines there is an entry point called graph service, which will give us access to a bunch of information like the Office 365 group, the devices in our tenant, the users defined in our tenant, as well as my currently logged in users, which is called me. And all of this stuff can be consumed using the REST APIs and using the Open Data Protocol and the Open Authorization Protocol from an authorization perspective. Of course, this kind of XML documents target platforms which can automatically read these kind of files. We will not do that manually. But we have in the Microsoft Graph website a Graph Explorer tool, which is really powerful just to play with the APIs without having to write any real line of code. So just to show you how it works, I'm already logged in with my account in my development tenant, as you can see from here, and I can consume the Graph API, for example, to query myself, to query the object which represents myself. If I query for the me entity inside the root URL of the V1 graph endpoint, you can see here I have the information related to my current user. Or I can query the list of all the users that I have in my tenant, and I will get back an array, a JSON representation of an array of objects, which will be all of the users in my tenant, and so on and so forth.
Now, Paolo, on that one, actually, can you show also the beta endpoint for me? Because we saw that the me within the V1.0 was relatively small, but this actually shows how things are evolving. So in the beta endpoint, as an example, there's a lot of additional capabilities and a lot of additional attributes available for the user. So this is the user attributes in the beta endpoint, and then the V1.0 is a slightly more simplified entity.
Yeah, and the platform is growing really, really fast. So we will have a lot. We already have, and we will have much more capabilities in the near future. So it is really challenging. Okay, so let me go back just for a while to the slide deck, and then we will be back pretty soon to some other demos. So we already saw that from an architectural perspective, the Graph APIs, the Microsoft Graph API, are, we could say, user-centric, because we interact with the user object. We have the me users, user and all the other users in the tenant. And through the graph, we can go through all of the related objects, like people managing someone else, people working with someone, documents, calendar, contacts of specific users. And so we can really say that it is a set of APIs, user-centric, and which allow us to go through the graph of entities really easily and using a fluent approach in order to consume all of the services which are right now available in the offering of Office 365. So that's it. Now we want to see how to consume these APIs from a .NET developer perspective and from a developer perspective more in general. So let's move to the Graph SDK and let's see what is it and how it works. First of all, and the probably the main information is that the Graph SDK is an open source SDK. In fact, the Graph SDK is available on GitHub on a dedicated repository in which you can find all of the source code so that you can understand how it works, and you can eventually use it and extend it if you like. You will just need to fork it on your own environment. There is a .NET version of the SDK, which will be our focus today. But as we already saw on the graph.microsoft.io website, there are many other platforms covered. How can it be done? Well, It can be done because basically, from an architectural perspective, the SDK has a bunch of main types which have been defined by the developers who created the Graph SDK. But there are also a bunch of auto-generated entities or types which are auto-generated using an engine which is called Viper, still open source on GitHub, and which simply reads the $ metadata descriptors and generates for us all of the entities. So, for example, we saw in the previous demo that we have the user entity defined in the $ metadata descriptors, and we have the me property of the graph service entity. Well, the auto-generated code will create a user type, which will represent, from a domain model perspective, the idea of a user, will give us a graph service client object with a me property, which will give us access to the currently logged in users, and so on and so forth. So a bunch of types and interfaces will be auto-generated using this Viper code generator. From an authentication perspective, because in order to consume the Graph API, you need to authenticate against the target tenant, the Graph SDK provides us an open model so that we don't have any restriction and any constraint related to the authentication model, but we will simply need to provide a delegate, a .NET delegate method, which will do the real implementation of the authentication technique and which will give back to the Graph SDK the open authorization access token, which will be injected in the HTTPS requests against the APIs. Moreover, it has an asynchronous programming model, and it provides an asynchronous programming model so that you can use it from whatever kind of application, and you can benefit from the asynchronous model to have much more available and responsive applications, not responsive from a responsiveness perspective, from the mobile perspective, but I mean with a more smart behavior when consumed by the end user, because they will be asynchronous applications. So how can you use the Graph SDK for .NET or in general? Well, first of all, you have to install the Graph SDK, which is also made available as a NuGet package. So if you want to dig into the source code, you can go on GitHub, you can fork it, you can play with the source code. But if you want to simply use it, you can simply create a Visual Studio project, you can access the NuGet browser and search for the Microsoft.graph package. You will have to register your application so that it will be allowed for that application to consume the Graph APIs. And right now, at the time of recording, we have at least two options to register one application. The first one is probably the well-known one, which is based on Azure Active Directory. So you will have to go to the management portal of Azure. You have to target the tenant you want to consume, and you have to register a new application, and you will get back a client ID, eventually shared secret, and you will be able to declare what are the permissions, so the authorizations that you want to give to the application, whether it is working as an application only, with an application only access token, or with a delegated access token. Another option, which is pretty new, is the one based on the V2 authentication endpoint, which is the option that allows us to use both Azure Active Directory, Azure Active Directory Business to Consumer, and the Microsoft account within a unique authentication endpoint and within a unique application registration portal, which is the one highlighted in the second link, https://apps.dev.microsoft.com. If you want to use the first option, Azure Active Directory, you will have to consume and to implement the authentication logic using ADIL, so Microsoft Azure Active Directory Authentication Library, which is now in version 3.0. If you want to consume the new V2 authentication endpoint, you will have to leverage the MSAL, Microsoft Authentication Library, which is still in preview right now. So again, you shouldn't use it in production, but you can start playing with it. And using MSAL, you will have a new approach which allows you to use both the Azure AD and the Microsoft account identities within the same and unique authentication endpoint.
So on that one, actually, isn't the new model is also the one where you actually grant the permissions dynamically, which we will see within the code. So you're giving the permissions beforehand. You're actually asking them as part of the code requests, which is cool.
Yeah, it's really cool and much more free. So you are not tied to define what are the permission when you declare the application, but you can ask to the end users a consent to have those specific permission that you want to have when you want to consume the APIs.
Yep.
So you create your project, you install the NuGet package, you register your application in whatever registration platform you like, and you prepare the authentication code, which will be a delegate that has to be provided to the Graph Service client. And then you are ready to go. You are ready to consume the Graph APIs. So let's see. Let's see it in action using a bunch of code in Visual Studio. I will go to the Visual Studio project I already created just for the sake of having a sample ready to go, and which will be available within the next master merge of PMP in the PMP repo under the samples folder. And here you can find a console application in which I already added the package for MSAL as well as the package for the Graph SDK for .NET. In this sample, I decided to use MSAL to show you something much more new. And here I will use the public client application, which is one of the two types available in MSAL to do authentication against the unified endpoint. And this one is the one used whenever you want to access the target services using the client ID of a specific application and consuming the target's framework of APIs. So here I will have to get the client ID, an access token with delegation for my current user, and the public client application object. I have to create an instance of the Graph Service Client type, which is provided by the Microsoft.graph namespace, which is the main one for the Graph SDK for .NET. And as you can see, the constructor of this type, when I have a delegate authentication provider, which internally will have to implement the authentication logic. Here I simply declare that I want to acquire a token asynchronously for a specific set, a specific scope of permissions, and the permissions which are available in this array of strings are defined under the graph.microsoft.io in the documentation section. And just after that, I get back an access token, which I can provide as a bearer authentication header, or authorization header, sorry, in the HTTP request. So starting from here, I will have a Graph Client object, which I can use, for example, to query the me property, which will represent, from a Graph API perspective, the current user. But if you think about the Graph APIs, the Graph APIs are provided to us as a set of REST endpoints. So through the Graph Client object, I will access the me property, which I will have to request for. So I will have to make an HTTP request for the me object, and I will have to declare what I want to do with the me object. So for example, here I want to get the me object, so myself. I want to select the display name property. Of course, here I have a typo just to test what happens in case of any issue. So I will request the display name of myself, and I will do a get, an HTTP get in asynchronous for that specific HTTP request. So under the cover, what is happening is that the Graph SDK provide us a set of methods and interfaces which are auto-generated, mainly auto-generated using Viper, which will construct under the cover of this method the HTTP request that we want to make. So let's go just for a while to the Graph SDK source code, which we have in another project, which I forked from the GitHub open source project. And here I have the Graph Service Client type. And if I scroll a little bit down, or if I search for the me property, you can see that the me property is a property of type iUserRequestBuilder. Well, if I go to see what is the definition of this RequestBuilder object, I will be able to see that it is an interface which is auto-generated by Viper, which gives me a request object, through which I will have an iUserRequest. The request object, which will be the one which will create for me the HTTP request. In fact, if I go to see how it is defined and how it is implemented, we can see that here we have some HTTP requests which are built inside this method, which will simply create for us any kind of HTTP request, GET, PUT, POST, whatever, providing the specific content type of the request or of the response, and using the low-level primitives provided by .NET Framework to consume over HTTP and HTTPS the target APIs.
So, but as a developer, Paolo, on that one, technically you don't have to even go to this level. All of this is generated and available for you. So,
absolutely. It is totally generated for you, but it is really nice to see that they hide all of the complexities of consuming the REST-based and HTTP-based requests. And we will simply need to invoke through a Fluent API a set of objects which will give us access to all of the properties, all of the metadata of the entity that we want to consume.
True. That's a good sign of a nicely designed SDK, isn't it? So.
Absolutely, yeah. And just to dig a little bit more inside how the SDK works, so we saw we have a request model, which will use a set of auto-generated request builder types, which will be the I asterisk request builder, where every request builder will create, will build, literally, a request object, which will, under the cover, implement the real HTTP request for us. In fact, when I said graphclient.me.request, I had access to the request object, which will be able and which will create for me and for us the open data protocol request to consume a user object, which will be my currently logged in user. And when I use the get async method, I simply fire the HTTP get request against the target endpoint, which is what happens under the cover of the get async method. Whenever we query the entities provided by the Graph API through the SDK, we can use a querying model, which simply replicates the behavior and the capabilities of the open data protocol, which is provided by the Graph SDK. In fact, for example, in the Open Data Protocol, we have the capability to provide through the URL query string parameters of the requests that we make. We can provide arguments like $select to define that we want to simply make a selection, a projection of properties of the entities that we want to query. Or we can filter using the $filter, or we can do sorting, or we can expand graphs of objects. Well, also in the SDK, we have the corresponding methods. So if from an Open Data Protocol perspective, we use the $select argument in the query string, in the SDK, we have the select method. If we use the $filter, we have the filter method, and so on, so forth. Pretty easy to understand if you know how the Open Data Protocol works. And we will show you pretty soon in another demo how these methods work. Moreover, there is also out-of-the-box support for paging, because let's say you want to query the users you have in your tenant. Well, most likely those users will be hundreds or thousands or hundreds of thousands of users. It wouldn't make any sense to make a unique request and download thousands or hundreds of thousands of users through REST, through a JSON serialization of those array of users. Of course, it is much more wise to just request pages of objects and to go through all of the pages as long as you need to browse all of the entities. Out of the box, the Open Data Protocol and the Graph APIs do paging for us. So whenever we make a request with whatever platform we use, we will be able to get pages of entities. And if you want, using the SDK, you have some high-level support, again, to hide the complexities of doing paging and to simply benefit of the capability to do paging across all of the entities. So let me move to one more demo to show you how the request model works and how the query model works. So let me go back to Visual Studio. And let me show you one more or some more examples. Still using the Graph client and still using the asynchronous development model, as you can see, we can, for example, access the collection of all of the users we have in our tenant. We can use the request builder to build a request object, which will prepare under the cover the HTTP request, which will be able to select only those properties of the user entities that we want to retrieve, like the display name, the user principal name, and email. Notice that here we have to know what are the properties available, so we need to have some knowledge about the Graph API by themselves, even if we are using SDK. And then
to be fair, Paolo, on that one, I think it's a fair point, because the graph is evolving all the time. So the properties, we're adding new properties. So keeping up with the changes and the properties which are within the object would be a pretty difficult thing to do.
Yeah, and on the other side, it is, I think, absolutely fair and normal to be aware of all of the properties of the entities that you want to consume.
Sure.
So I would say no harm on that, no worries, even if you need to know what are the properties of the objects, and even if you have to provide a string to define what are the properties that you want to select.
Sure.
And the same happens if you want to select the user, for example, doing or applying some kind of filtering. So again, I get the client, the service client object. I get the collection of users. I make a request object. I select what are the properties that I want to retrieve, and I apply a filter, which has to be provided using the open data filtering syntax. So in the open data protocol, when you want to say that you want to have one property equal to something, you will have to use the EQ syntax or statement. Well, the same here. So this string provided as the input argument for the filter method will have to adhere to the open data protocol filtering rules. And then again, you fire an HTTPS GET request.
And on that one, yeah. Paolo, so a few kind of comments. Obviously, it's pretty amazing to see that it's a single line of code getting all of that information, and you're able to kind of fluently go through the graph and the properties and all of that, which is super cool. Now, the other thing which is actually kind of noticeable here is that when you're querying those users, you're getting only 10 users, right?
Yeah, exactly. We are only getting one page. And in fact, you can play with the paging by yourself. You can use the skip and top methods, which allow you to select just the first X element. In my example, are the first 5 elements, skipping the first 10 elements. But you can even leverage the paging capabilities, as we told you a few minutes ago. And in fact, here is an example about how to do paging against the collection of users, so that you can go through all of the users and not only through those provided by the first page. For example, here I access again and one more time the collection of users. I make a request through the request builder. I select the properties and I get asynchronously the first page of the result, which is always the default. You cannot get the full set of elements. You will simply have one page by one all of the results. So what is really powerful from the design perspective of the Graph SDK for .NET and the Graph SDK more in general is that when you make a request, you will get back an object, as you can see, which is of type iGraph service users collection page, because it will represent a single page. But through that single page, you can, of course, browse through the users, as you can see here, but you can also see if there is a next page request object, which will be a new request, which you can fire using the get async method in order to get the following page. And page by page, you can go through all of the entities so that you will be able to consume even the full list of users, but without overloading the platform and the services on one side, and without overloading your client and the network as well, downloading too many entities at the same time. So
it's pretty neat, actually. That's a super, super capability. Again, making things simple for accessing the information.
Exactly. Now, let me go back to the slide deck just to share with you some few more information about not only how to query, but also about how to manage entities that you have through the Graph API and through the SDK. So, for example, we saw that we can consume the collection of users. Good. Okay. But what if I want to add a new user? Or what if I want to create a new Office 365 group? Or if I want to upload a document in a document library or in OneDrive for Business? Well, of course, we can do that. And whenever we are managing a collection of entities, if that collection of entities can be updated, which means provide the capabilities to be updated, and the current user has proper permissions, or the current application has proper permissions to do that, because of course whatever you do has to have proper permission to be done, but if we are in the right context, so with good permission and targeting a collection which is maintainable, you can use methods like add async, update async, put or delete async, which are again the counterpart of what we have at the low level, at the HTTP level, when you want to make a post or a patch or a put or a delete using HTTP. And again, the complexities of HTTP are hidden from us. We simply have to add an object asynchronously to a collection, and under the cover it will be the SDK to make the HTTP post request serializing using, for example, the JSON serializer, the Newtonsoft JSON serializer, the user object that we want to add to the collection of users. And again, this is really, really powerful from a productivity and from a developer perspective. And what if, while doing any operation like a request or an update or adding a user, an exception happened? Well, luckily, the SDK gives us also the service exception type, which is the specific exception we have in the SDK for .NET, in order to catch and handle, properly handle, all of the issues or all the errors which could happen while we make an HTTP request against the Graph APIs. In fact, through an instance of the service exception object, we have access to the error with the error code, the error message, any inner error if we are against a chain of errors that happened on the server side, so that we can inspect all of the information to better understand what happened on the server side in case of an exception. And moreover, we have an isMatch method provided by the service exception type, which allows us to check if the current exception is of any of the predefined and specific error which are expected as possible issues, as possible errors raised by the Graph API when we consume it. One really interesting error type and error code is the one related to throttling issues. In fact, if we consume a set of services which are provided on a cloud platform and by a cloud platform, of course it could happen that because of some throttling rules that avoid to overstress the server platform, we could be throttled. So in that case, in case of that happening, we will get back a service exception, as like as with any other kind of issue, but we will have a specific error code which will instruct us, which will inform us that we got throttled, so that, for example, we can wait just for a while and repeat the request a few milliseconds later to not stress too much the platform, but to gain, to get our goal just after a few milliseconds. Almost like we do, Vesa, in the PNP core component, when we do the execute query retry, and we retry automatically for the developer through the capabilities of the core component any request that get throttled by the SharePoint online APIs, for example.
True. True, and that could be a nice nice way of testing, maybe creating a pull request which will have this natively included, and then see if we can get it into the SDK. So that's a good point.
Why not? Absolutely. So with that said, I think you have got an idea of what is the power of the Graph API and mainly of the Graph SDK, and you understood what is the main architecture under the cover of the Graph SDK, which is based on the request builder model and on the request objects, as well as which provide us all of the methods that are the counterpart of the Open Data Protocol and of the HTTP protocol capabilities that we have at the low level. But luckily, and right now, since we have this new SDK, we can do it at the high level without having to dig into the details of the open data and of the HTTP protocols. I think that that's all for this technical coverage of the Graph SDK. And basically, probably we want to remind some of the URLs, useful URLs to the people attending this webcast.
Yes, so this is a set of links, just a kind of a collection of resources what we have for the Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices of SharePoint Patterns and Practices. If you go AKMS Office Dev PMP, that's one location for all of these resources, but we do have Channel 9 direct links as well, or MSDN links more around SharePoint guidance, Yammer, where you can ask questions around, for example, if this webcast raised questions around some of the things what we covered, you can use that Yammer group, the PMP Yammer group for those questions as well. Monthly community calls, a lot of stuff in the GitHub, docs.com for presentations, like the webcast presentation, what we just went through, is available within the docs.com/office-dev-pmp. But I think that's it for this one. I know about the PMP Partner Bank, really important and a nice demo around things. But I think that's it for this webcast and around the topics of .NET SDK. Any final words from your side, Paolo?
Just want to say thank you for attending the webcast and enjoy with the Graph API and the Graph SDK.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Paolo, for your great presentation and walkthrough on the things. We'll add the resources, links to those individual samples and all of the other resources within the video notes as well. So you can scroll down on the screen if you're using a browser or go to the pages where we release the webcast for additional links and resources around the covered topics. But I think that's it. So thank you, everybody, for watching. And we'll come up with a new webcast sooner or later. Thank you.